Morning.
Morning.
Nice sunny day.
Beautiful.
Yes. Any questions?
Well, Governor, you're a longtime political observer. Some people are comparing President Reagan's problems to Watergate. What's your impression of what's going on and what it might mean to the Reagan presidency?
I don't see the connection at all. And when I say that, I'm talking about the result of the revelation. The major mistake that President Nixon made was to cover up the Watergate incident. That was the mistake. I see no attempt here to cover up. The Poindexter has, I guess the word is resigned, and the North has left, and there seems to be a considerable amount of excitement to get at the bottom of what's going on. That's the difference. And I think that's an important difference. I've always believed that the cover-up was a terrible thing to do in any event, my administration or anybody's. And Nixon attempted the cover-up. I don't see that same element there at all.
How badly damaged do you think the Reagan presidency is?
Not beyond repair. Something has happened which shouldn't have happened. Talk about some kind of a bureaucracy running amok. I think that's probably a fair description of it. Some people decided they were just going to do things on their own. And I think that needs to be cleaned out. We can't have that in this country.
You're taking the president's explanation at face value, and you're not.
I don't know how else, what else to say to you. Obviously, all I know is what you know, and I'm trying to judge it from that same perspective.
Do you have any concerns that something of that nature could be going on without the president's knowledge?
Yes.
You believe that?
That's why I use the word run amok down in the bureaucracy.
Is he still responsible, though?
Certainly. I felt the same thing about myself. You know, that's important. It's a very important distinction, and I hope that you don't forget it in the sense that there's always that desire to diffuse responsibility by an elected official, whether it's a legislator or a governor. And why also I've always believed very strongly in clear identification of who's in charge. I voted against a coalition when I was a senator because somebody needs to say it's those guys. I don't believe in diffusing of responsibility. And so when I say it's his fault, sure, it's his fault, because he's the President of the United States. Now, it would be his fault in the sense that he didn't direct all this to happen, but how he picked people who did that. That's how you get to his sense of responsibility.
He's had really just almost incredible personal popularity for the first 6 years. Do you think this series of events is going to sort of take the luster off of the last 2 years of his presidency?
I think that the majority party in Congress are going to try very diligently to see that happens. I don't think they're going to win that one. Now, I have to make a caveat. As long as the president continues doing what he's doing, and that is to root it out and get at the bottom of it, and then act. And so far, he's done that. However, if it gets to any point in time in which there is a clear picture of cover-up, then certainly I don't think it can be repaired. Because we've had all of that. This nation needs. And I would hope that Congress doesn't become as obsessed with this, and that doesn't mean they should back off. But I watched the whole Watergate thing as it unfolded, and all the congressmen and senators were wearing appropriate shirts and ties because every day they were on national media and they were diverting their attention of a domestic and foreign policy just everybody wanted to get in on it. And I would hope that they would pay attention to the needs of this nation of ours, because there's a lot of very serious problems that Congress has to deal with. This is one, but it's not the only one.
Governor, turning to the forecast, budget forecast, and revenue projections released by the Executive Department yesterday, what's your assessment as to that level of projected state income meeting state needs? And do you think that a tax increase is necessary for the next biennium?
I'll start off by saying a tax increase is not necessary. And I think if anybody can make that judgment, I can. Is it going to be easy, which is my next answer, and it is no question, it's no. However, it's not been easy for me, but I think with the cooperative help of department heads and a little bit of innovation, that the governor-elect can get this job done. However, it's going to be very difficult for him because he has made many promises to many people, and I know they're out expecting the promises to be delivered. I've talked to, most recently, those involved in the arts. They can hardly wait for their next $1 million. And they expect Neil to give them $1 million or whatever it is they're asking. That's only by way of illustration. He's got the tent committees out there, and they're going to come back with things that they, I think, legitimately believe should be done. But nonetheless, he's restricted by the amount of money that's available. And so he's going to have to stand up some pretty tough things. That is not unknown to me. I think it can be done. I would believe it'd be a very serious mistake for the governor-elect to recommend a tax increase of any kind. As a matter of fact, what should be done is to reconnect, and which would get $300 million, and reduce the personal income tax rates in Oregon. If I'm not mistaken, he has said that during his campaign, as I believe Norma Paulus did as well. That's a campaign promise that should be delivered to Oregonians.
Is your recommendation or opinion exclusive of gasoline taxes for highway maintenance?
I've already indicated, because I hadn't read the report and he just asked me last week, that I certainly could support the 2 cents on the gas tax for the state highways and even the registration, but I don't know as if I would, as a matter of fact, I'm certain I would not support a 2% sales tax on the sale of automobiles. But then, now he has to deal with that promise, because he's already said, as a matter of fact, it was a major issue late in the campaign. He had no intention, he never suggested, he backed off of it right away. He's pretty well established on that. So
what kind of message did you get, Governor, when he refused to rule out the possibility of that $1.1 billion increase?
I think that was an immediate contradiction. In other words, when you're right. He said, I haven't seen it, I'll look at it, consider it, or something like that. That by itself is a contradiction, I think, from the very strong statement he made during the course of the campaign, late in the campaign.
Governor, apparently the reform of federal tax laws is going to create quite a windfall for the state, and there are some legislators who are getting together to figure out how that should be spent. One of the ideas is to return it to the taxpayers in the form of tax breaks. What do you think ought to be done?
First of all, there is no windfall unless there's positive action taken. There's just, that's not, well, I wouldn't use the word windfall. There's going to be an increase in tax collections, but that's because the federal taxes can be lowered to be deducted against the state return, just that. But in order to get what we would call a windfall, which is about $300 million, you have to take a direct action of connecting to the federal. Doing that then, there would be about $300 million. When you say that they want to return to the taxpayers, the only way that should be returned to the taxpayers is in reduced income tax rates.
Do you favor partial connection?
No, I think if I were going to, well, I'd have to look at all the details. But I would say to you, I would move into it with the concept of really totally reconnecting.
Governor, if you're going to give it back to them, why connect it all then?
It's important for us to lower the income tax rates. I understand what you're saying. It's taketh away and then giveth. Why go through that laundering process? But it is important if we have an opportunity to lower our tax rates. We should jump at that opportunity.
But don't you have to raise them first so you can lower them back?
Well, but it doesn't. Yes, that's right. But we're not affected in the process.
I mean, is the net result of lower taxes?
The net result in lower taxes.
From what they are today, if you raise them when you reconnect and give the money back, you'll come back lower than what you were at the start.
The rate would be the same. No. Let's take it in a generic term. That should end up what is so euphemistically called revenue neutral. Neutral in the fact that you take $300 million and give back $300 million. That's the effect of it. But that's not the reason for doing it. The reason for doing it is to lower our income tax rates, which we can do, and we should do. And I say that because I've said to you, and it is factual, it's not fantasy or even speculation, that we have lost the opportunity for jobs because of our high income tax rates. That this absolute, that's not a guess or a theory or anything else.
How would you describe, what kind of debate would you anticipate is going to take place in the legislature when it comes time to reconnect and what's going to happen with that money?
Well, you'll hear the typical debate. It is engraved. I guess you go to a public elected school, and the public elected school is tax the rich, and you'll hear that. And so as they deal with it, they're going to make sure that the ordinary citizen is not hurt, but we're going to go get the rich people. If I were there, however, I would indicate that the rich people are in the category of annual income of probably $17,000 to $28,000, because that's where our tax hits. And I don't think they can quite make that as, quote, rich people. And so that, but you'll hear that. That's sort of a textbook. You know, they write a book, and this is what you're supposed to say. That this is, well, you heard it in Congress, same thing, that you folks aren't going to get hurt, but those rich folks are really, we're going to really get them. I saw our senator running for the U.S. Senate. That was one of his major ads. Got to put money in your jeans, he says. Well, that, if you're asking me, the soliloquy that's going to take place, that's what's going to happen.
Well, is there going to be like a frenzy of ideas of what to do with that money? Are we going to use it for schools? Are we going to help the homeless? Is this money going to be?
Well, now there has to be one thing has to happen before you start spending any of that money. That is, if you're not going to return it. And that is, you have to raise the statute that is the limit on the growth of the budget. You have to raise that. I would be interested to see if anybody proposes that. But you have to raise that if you want to spend it for homeless or, you know, unless you're going to return it. If you want to spend it inside the budget, you're going to have to raise that.
Do you have a sense that because of the promises that have been made to so many people by the governor-elect, that there will be an effort to repeal the spending limit and do away with the 2% kicker?
That's going to be discussed, but let me give you that scenario. And what the scenario is this. Shall we raise the limit so that we can raise our budget and spend more money, or shall we reduce taxes? Now, I don't know which side you want to take on that issue, but I know the textbook as well, and I'm on the other side of that.
Governor, have you gotten any new information on the Graham-Rudman effect on this study?
Okay. Nothing new. As we dealt with our budgets, we anticipated the cuts that might be coming in and measured it at that time, and that's all part of our budgetary process.
An unknown variable at this point as far as next year, what the effect will be?
Definitively unknown, but there's some pretty good guesses, and so that's being anticipated in terms of the budget.
That's going to be a problem as far as this?
That'll always be a problem. It'll be a continuing problem.
Corrections Division is proposing to the legislature that the legislature find money to pay for a nearly $30 million prison expansion plan. Where is that money going to come from?
You can ask that question fairly, Ellen, in several areas, including, I would add, human resource, two-parent family. Where is that money going to come from? The number of inmates at the prison that are coming to us, where that money. So when you ask that question, all I can tell you is that is an opportunity for the governor-elect. I've had my share of opportunities. It's now his time for opportunities.
You're saying we should return this so-called windfall that we're getting from federal tax reconnect. You don't think we should use that money for your agencies?
I believe I am now the governor in the next 4 years. What would Vic Atiyah do? Vic Atiyah would not ask for raising the limit on the budget. I would operate with the monies that would be available to me. I have done that for 8 years. I see no reason to change. There are always what ifs. There's always major issues out there. It's not any different with the governor-elect as it has been with me for 8 years and the governors before me. And so you sit down and make the decisions. I've made some very hard decisions, very hard decisions. And it's now the governor-elect's turn to make hard decisions.
Do you agree that the legislature should find the money for your corrections division's plan?
That doesn't mean that, I certainly believe that legislature ought to look for a way to solve the problem and to look at what we can do for corrections, and I would do the same. That doesn't mean $20 million, however.
We just had a case in Portland where an inmate was released on temporary leave, shotgunned his wife to death. This is the latest in a string of these inmates released on temporary leave who've done that. Do you think that program is operating the way it should be, and should we be releasing people like that?
Alan, there's only two things you can do in regard to corrections and in the area of what we're talking about. And that is, and I'm going to say parole or temporary leave, we'll use them interchangeable, but I know they're different, but the same ideas, the ideas remain. You either have a parole system or you have no parole system. In other words, nobody gets paroled. Everybody serves full time. And I don't think that that, first of all, I don't think that that no parole system is a good one. I'm talking for the general population of the inmates that we're faced with. And I'm talking about sociologically as well. So there needs to be a parole system of some kind. Now, I would say to you that society is less horrified if a person serves full time, gets out, and the next day does what this temp leave inmate did. Because nobody was involved in that. No judgment was involved in that. He served full time, he went out, and he goes out and commits a murder the next day. Somehow society addresses that a little differently than someone that got out on parole and did the same thing. And so I'm saying to you, I've thought about it many times. We, those of us responsible for government, can totally defend ourselves if nobody gets out on temp leave or parole. Everybody goes flat out. And so then whatever happens after that is not our fault. They served their time and they got out. But that's not, I think, a responsible way for government to act. It's unfortunate. It's not something anybody wants to happen. No one wants any of these things to happen. But these are hard cases. And you made the hard case.
Do you think they should be releasing convicted rapists on temporary leave?
Or murderers, or child abuse. You pick, make a pick if you wish. Then you're saying a certain amount can be set out and others cannot be. I'm not sure about that either. I'm not really sure about that.
But that's what they're doing.
I know that. I understand you. You asked me the question. You want me to give you a definitive answer, and I'm saying I really can't give you a definitive answer. I think everything ought to be reviewed all the time. And the policies that they're dealing with should be reviewed all the time. And the inmates that get out should be reviewed all the time. No question about it. But I want to again say, because I feel very strongly about this, that the articles that you've written have indicated that everybody that gets out commits a heinous crime after they get out. Now, that's not what you said. I'm talking about the way that people read it and receive it, because you outlined six inmates, I recall, the boxes and their pictures and the crimes they committed. Those are the hard cases. And so, as it say, you withdraw the whole system because of that? It's not what you say, but I'm beginning, the public may say that we ought not to have one. I'm saying it's not that simple.
Governor, today they're meeting on the Mallheur flooding situation, and one of the proposals is a canal divert some of the water. Some people say it's expensive. Do you think that's a good idea? And if not, do you have any other ideas?
I don't right now. I know the alternatives, including the canal, and what they call a non-build alternative, and then some variations in the middle of that. I will get a report. I understand if the appointments are worked out on Monday for Bill Young, I get a review of this agency, this task force that I put together. I'll look at it then, and I'll make my decision, at least what I think ought to be done. But I don't want to do it in advance of that meeting.
At this point, do you have any strong feelings one way or another about the canal?
No, am I leaning in one direction versus another? No, I really need to look and see what the cost-benefit ratio is on a canal, the long-range benefits versus what else could be done with whatever dollars we might be able to get, what I might consider to be the reality of dollars in Congress at the present time to do whatever it is we want to get done. I'll look at it in that light, particularly the reality of what dollars we might be able to get to help the people out there. Because it would be really foolish for us to go on, embark on one that would really has no reality at all. And so I'll have to take a look at it. But I don't want to make a decision now until I talk to Bill, which I understand will be Monday.
Governor, a comment you made a bit earlier about the legislature, there always being big issues out there, and certainly the prisons and schools and liability insurance talking list this year. From that respect of your comment, do you really expect next session to be any different than sessions of the recent past?
Well, I have to figure out when you say no different. Will there be less arguments, which, you know, or same arguments or more arguments or whatever? Or no, I don't think there's any much different. You know, it's interesting to me that as we crank up for a legislative session, and this has happened, you know, now 20 years, I have some familiarity with it. There's always some issue out there. Usually, an issue is, for all the demands out there, we weren't going to have enough money. That you can almost count on that one, because that happens every 2 years. The thing I find most curious, sort of reflecting, is that we seem to get along very well for about 18 months when the legislature is not here. And then when the legislature gets in the session, everything is wrong with the state, because you know we get several thousand bills to correct it, whatever it happens to be. And then the legislature does their thing, and they go home, and we somehow seem to live and survive between that session and the next one. I'm not picking on the process, because I was a part of it. I'm just seeing that's nature. Everybody comes down, and I understand these aren't all invented by legislators. Here's the problem which got to be solved, you know, constituents, so we got to get a bill in to deal with it. Everything is wrong, but somehow we seem to survive in the 18 months in between. And so I say, if you look at it, sort of in perspective, know there are things that need to be done out there, do the best job you know how, get it done, go home. That's the best thing you can do for Oregonians.
Governor, in relation to the new governor and the new administration, do you think there's going to be any disappointment either by Oregonians or by the governor-elect and his staff concerning the powers and the ability to influence state government and the economy? Did you have any postpartum after election finding out that your powers and ability to influence the state and the economy were more limited than perhaps you thought going in?
Well, we accomplished a great deal. I suppose the only difference, Greg, is going to be we accomplished a great deal. There have been some very dramatic changes that have taken place. I'm very proud of what's happened during the 8 years, and I'm not just saying myself, because I didn't do it all. It was all the people that worked for me that got the job done. If I were to measure it in general terms, I'm not quite answering your question, but just let me answer it in my way. State government and the state of Oregon, both government and how it's operating and the opportunities for the future of Oregon and our economic opportunities today, are so far superior than when I became governor of the state of Oregon in 1979. So the new governor has an advantage that I did not have. I had to build it to where it is today, and the governor-elect gets that then and is going to be able to build on it. And when you ask me the question, I accomplished a lot of this with less dust kicking, but we accomplished it. And to me, the bottom line was more important than the kicking up of the dust. I've seen too many people over 28 years talk a lot and do nothing. I didn't talk very much, but we accomplished a whale of a lot. I know it. I know it. I know it by comparison. And we achieved it just by dogmatically going ahead and doing what needed to be done. What's to tell you? I think I would be delighted if the governor-elect would be able to accomplish in the first 4 years as much as we accomplished in the first 4 years.
Governor, you came into the governorship knowing the legislature, knowing the limitations of state government as well as its potentials. Has the governor-elect built up his own hopes and the hopes of the people who voted for him about what he can do as governor, given spending limits and 2% kickers and the general inertia of bureaucracy? Has he set himself up just to knock himself down with the realities of state government?
Well, yes, he's going to have to deal with setting himself up, and he's going to have to answer to you and to the people of Oregon as to why he could or could not accomplish what he wanted to accomplish. That's something you'll have to deal with him on. He did make those promises out there, and I would hope he kept track of them. And he needs, well, I know his constituents, whoever supported him, kept track of it, and will remind him of it if he doesn't remember it himself. And so his job's going to be a little more difficult. But there's one other thing two things of which I had an advantage and he doesn't. And one is, of course, the 20 years in the legislature. That counts two ways, because it leads to the second, is that I understand the laws of Oregon. I helped create a lot of laws of Oregon. I understand the bureaucracy. I know what it's all about. I knew the departments, and you just do it from familiarity. And so I had that advantage. But at the same time, I knew the people in the legislature, the people. They know me, and I know them. And so I had those advantages. It was interesting to me that someone, one legislator, said he never saw me walking up and down the halls with a tally sheet. Well, for some reason or other, he happened to think that's the way you do it. We had a tally sheet. We had a lot of tally sheets. And we kept count on measures that we were interested in. We just didn't walk up and down the hall with a tally sheet. It's incredible, really, the percentage of bills that we introduced, that we wanted, that were passed by the Oregon legislature. The kinds of things that we wanted done. That's why I say I'm very pleased with our stewardship of Oregon for the last 8 years. That's my judgment. You make whatever judgment you wish.
Governor, going into this session, what would you say the top five or half dozen top issues that the legislature must deal with?
Well, very clear, because of our discussion, is going to be this matter of budget. In other words, who's going to get what money? And of course, within that are the prisons, Allen, a human resource and a whole bunch of things that we won't detail right now. But the budget, balancing the budget without raising the limit within the money that you have available to you. Second is going to be this whole matter of the tax, reducing the income tax, reconnect and all the rest of that. That is going to be an important part of it. This question of what you do about property tax relief or school stabilization, still in the same field. I think, of course, as you know how I feel, school stabilization is a very strong priority, and that's going to be a great argument. The one that's going to get probably most of your, at least the television folks, visuals, is going to be tort liability. And you're going to get all kinds of visuals there. I mean, you're going to get all the hard cases that ever happened in Oregon. And you will find that probably will be, first, it might be kind of exciting for you at the very beginning, and my guess is it's going to sort of drag on and get pretty boring near the end. But tort liability is going to be a very major issue out there. What that's for. There's a lot of other important issues. That's enough for now.
The National Guard is starting to get their new helicopters, some of which will be used for the marijuana eradication.
Oregon is among them. That is a matter of marijuana and being able to go out and detect it. It's been suggested so many times that I call out the National Guard, and certainly it was a good idea to do it, except it was going to be money out of our budget, and the money we didn't have in our budget. With the federal government now allowing all these things to take place, it eases it up, makes it much more possible for us to lean harder on those folks that grow marijuana.
The role is somewhat limited to more than what most people think. Are you happy with the fact that they're doing such a limited part of it?
I'm happy that we're doing something. Obviously, always more would be better, but at least this is something, and it's going to help us. See, all the other things we've been doing, when I say we've been doing, the state police, the sheriffs, the city police, you know, on all their investigations and undercover work, and that's ongoing. So this is supportive of all of that, and it's going to help. So it's more than we've had and was going to help us. I think more would be better, but that you go as far as you can and do what you can with what you have.
Have you worked out precise plans for when you leave office,
personal? Yeah. No, I haven't. You mean have I made contacts and have I signed up with somebody? And what's that?
You have a job, Governor.
Yeah, no, I don't. I know. I still know what I want to do. I'm not sure where I'm going to do it. We're looking for some space. Probably I'll be located probably in the Park Washington building, but also my transition office. That is the governor's transition office, and we'll get through that. I have had some phone calls, but I still feel I'm governor of Oregon, and I shouldn't sign up for anything just yet until I'm no longer governor of Oregon, so I'm keeping track of where I can start on my leads, but I haven't signed up yet for anything. It will be international trade, and it will be consulting, and I will be in business for myself.
You've had some feelers, is that what you're saying? Some people have called you?
Said these are possible opportunities. I said, fine, I'll write it down and get back to you. In other words, they haven't been, I want you to do this right now. Let's talk about it when you leave office. I said, okay, and I write it down.
You mean
Oregon? Oregon, you betcha, absolutely.
Will you be traveling somehow, Oregon?
I'm certain to be traveling, yes. You guys won't know about it. You won't meet me there and greet me when I come back, but I'm going to do it anyway.
I take it it's going to involve some of the connections that you've made overseas.
Absolutely.
As governor.
Absolutely.
So you'll be spending a lot of time in the Oregon.
Yes, but I also look for some opportunities within the United States. And I think those opportunities exist here as well as elsewhere.
Does that mean you'd probably be starting your own company or joining
yes.
an existing one?
No, starting my own.
Starting your own company.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll be working with my son, who has his own company. But as to legally and all the rest, we haven't decided that, but I'm sure I'll be with my son working
will you,
together.
Will you be involved in the Middle East at all?
Oh, sure. I'll be going there if there's any opportunities. I'm going to look for opportunities wherever they might be. Well, you know, I'm a gun collector, but I'm not sure that they use muzzleloaders anymore in wars, so I'm really kind of a handicap right now.
What's going to happen to Lon?
Lon, he's on his own, I tell you. Thank you.
Thank you.